The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now we're joined in studio by an Arklow man who left school age 17, became an apprentice in an engineering company, but rose through the ranks to become its managing director. LMH Engineering employs over 200 people, with plans to increase that to 350 within the next year. It's a company that started in the mining industry around Avoca, but has ridden the wave of Ireland's data centre boom and continues to grow. James Kelly, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Adrian.
James, let's go back to the beginning. Where did you grow up and where did your fascination with steel come from?
So, grew up on the Beach Road in Arklow in County Wicklow. The fascination of steel was very simple. I was in my back garden one day as a 9-year-old, as you would be, kicking a football. And I was looking over the wall and there was a man there who ended up becoming my mentor. And he was doing engineering welding, small hobby jobs, farm buildings. And I ended up roaming in around for a look and to see if there was an opportunity here to have a go at something that I never saw before. And that was really the spark of where it all came to life.
So he took you on?
He took me on, yeah. He was in there, he was a bachelor. His name was William. He ended up being a very good close family friend. He took me in. I always wanted to do something with my hands. I was making window boxes at a very young age and I gravitated towards this. I wasn't academically minded. And engineering then turned into the passion. He would let me do things more than I was allowed to do at home with the family. You know, there was a case you were given the opportunity, let it be pick up an angle grinder, pick up a welder. It was, when you look back now, it was extremely young. There was obviously a lot of safety around it, but it felt natural.
And what was it about welding that you particularly liked?
I think it was the creative piece. I think it was being able to show something. I think it was the skill of being able to do it and being able to do something with your hands and being able to step back away from it and then having a bit of pride in what you just achieved.
And you were the first person, I think, in your school, in the Leaving Cert, to take, was it steelworking?
I was in the Christian Brothers School in Arklow, and there was no subject for metalwork. And I was 17, I was coming into my Leaving Cert year with a whole dilemma at home with my mother, making me do the Leaving Cert and me wanting to go out early and do an apprenticeship. It came to the Leaving Cert year and I pushed back, let's say, with the headmaster in the school at the time to say, look, I was passionate about steel, that the woodwork wasn't really for me. Was there any chance that the Board of Education could be asked to see if I could do a metalwork project for my Leaving Cert? And lo and behold, after some weeks of negotiation, I ended up getting that opportunity to make a metalwork set of gates, actually, for my Leaving Cert project.
But you were a little bit ambivalent in the first place about doing your Leaving Cert, weren't you?
I was. My mother used to say at home, like, education is no burden to carry. I had two older brothers. They had gone through their college cycles. I was the youngest. I was 7 years younger than the two guys. And mother wanted me to follow in the footsteps of them to go third level education. I didn't want to do it. I wanted to be out. I wanted to be about. I wanted to do something with my hands. And there was a negotiation trade-off at home to say, look, I had suffered with Pertussis diseases in my hip, and they thought that the trade was going to be too hard for me. So there was a negotiation. I'd be allowed to do the trade if I'd done the Leaving Cert.
So you said Pertussis disease. That's a very rare condition, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a blood tissue disease. I had it at the age of 9. It was ongoing for a couple of years and we were trying to get to the root cause of it. It was rare at the time. We did get to the bottom of it, but it prevented my hip socket forming. So then all of a sudden, this was the tool at home to prevent me going into the trade, because it was, steel is a heavy industry, there's no question about it. But it was a case I wanted to do it, and that was the negotiation.
So your parents wanted an easier life for you, not one in trade.
They wanted me to sit down, third level education, taking it easy and not mulliking, is what they used to call it at home.
Yeah, but you had different ideas, didn't you? So you went for an apprenticeship.
Went for an apprenticeship. When I done the Leaving Cert project, there was a career meeting in the school in one evening, and I had an apprenticeship already offered me by one engineering company in Arklow when I was 16, because they knew like that I was into the trade. And at the career evening, there was the MD at the time, Miles Fenlon was his name, for LMH Engineering, came into the school and he saw what I produced from my Leaving Cert, and there and then offered me an apprenticeship to come into LMH Engineering. Now there was a dilemma at home with my mother, in the sense of where would he go and do his apprenticeship all of a sudden. It wasn't my dilemma anymore. So there was a local building firm, PJ Smith, who would have been a great close friend of the family. And I remember Mammy going down to talk to PJ where was the best place for him to do the apprenticeship now, all of a sudden that he had two. And it was noted at the time that LMH was the Brown Thomases of engineering. And subsequently, we ended up going to LMH.
So that sealed it. Sealed it at home. And what did your parents do for a living?
Father was a factory worker, part-time. He worked in poultry, so we never saw him at Christmas time. We saw him all throughout the summer. My mother was a curtain maker. She had her own little empire, we call it, her own business. They worked hard. My father would have supported my mother in the curtains and the making of the curtains. And we all got jobs. Like, we were young at the time. It wasn't cool to be telling their friends that you were going home to stuff plaited tiebacks. And it was a case of everyone had to muck in and do what they had to do at home.
And you said, I think, that a lot of your work ethic comes from watching your mother work.
Yeah, mother was passionate about work. The house had to be right every morning, 7 o'clock, hoovered every day on the button, out to work for the day. We'd all be gone to school, home in the evening time. She would get her walk in with her friends, local friends on the beach road. She would then sit down for the evening. She'd start to hand stitch, and every curtain had to be hand stitched. There was no good to be machine stitched. There was the precision piece of that as well. So we used to sit and we'd be watching mother working till 11, 12 o'clock at night. So I think that's where the work ethic came out.
Even in the toughest times.
Absolutely. She was working. Yeah, no, more so in the toughest times. Yeah. We've seen it all, like, you know.
Mm. And back in LMH Engineering, you're an apprentice and you're getting on well there for a few years. And then you're offered a job as a floor manager at the age of 22, was it?
22, yeah. I was 22. So I went into LMH and I went in eyes wide open. I knew what I wanted to do. I was going to do the trade, and I was going to eventually go back out, break away with the mentor that had the engineering company and try and make something of that. When I was in LMH a week, I pushed for him, and Larry was his name, and he's still with us today. I pushed him hard to let me go at the welding. One evening, I said to him that we were on a pharmaceutical project. I told him that I'd be able to weld that. And jokingly, he says back to me, of course you would. And I took the opportunity. I said, I'll take the welder now when his back turned. And he came back around and he saw me that I was doing, it was high pressure welding, and he saw that I was okay at it after a week just in my apprenticeship, when you would have been deemed to be the helper at the time. So he left me at it. And from then on, I gravitated up, I accelerated very quick up through the trade, as did other apprentices. They all got great exposure in trade. My plan was I was going to get the trade, get the paperwork and out and try to do something myself.
And all the while you're managing older people.
Absolutely, yeah. When I went into the role, there was all ages, up to 67, 68 years of age, all different personalities. It was a strange one at the age of 22.
Guy in their early 20s now telling them what to do.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely challenging at the time. But I suppose,
were they okay with that?
They were okay to an extent. That I think when they saw the change coming and they saw that there was substance in the thinking, I think it made it better for me. Now, there was a lot. It was in the deep end. Like, we were in technical engineering. There was a lot of stuff at this stage that I wouldn't have had exposure to. You know, you're dealing with the design side of the house. You're dealing with the drawings. You're dealing with all aspects of it. You're dealing with the finance people all of a sudden at 22, making sure everything is going in right to them. So it was definitely a learning curve. But I think when they saw after a period of time that I was committed to, I was there before them. I had one rule every morning: be always in before everyone. Have the place open for them, have the lights on, and then leave last in the evening. That was the rule.
So you were building up this expertise and this reputation on the practical side of the business, taking care of everything. But LMH Engineering, which at the time, you know, made very large steel structures, engineered them for mines and for big industrial facilities, it seemed to be losing money. So what did you do next?
Yeah, we had the bust of the Celtic Tiger. We ran off that in our worst years, 11, 12 and 13, just as I was... that mentor of mine that I mentioned earlier, he just passed away, and then all of a sudden I had an ambition that I still wanted to go do something myself. When then an opportunity come to come in on the company, totally oblivious to finance at the time, we were sitting at a meeting room table and obviously discovered the losses we were making. And it was a case, I was committed to it. I had just a child at home. She was, Mia was only 2 weeks old. We were committed to it at this stage. And it was a case just, I remember going out, we had to make drastic decisions. There was short time in the facility for everyone. And it was a case, we just had to put the shoulder to the wheel. I remember going in one morning, and there was a crew in the workshop and they weren't happy. And I wouldn't be happy either, to be quite honest with you, to say that they were on short time. And it was tough at my age then, when I look back on it now. You're facing people with families, and it was the driving force of where we are today. I always go back to the days that it would have to go out, was sent out to say, right, look, you're on short time and you're splitting crews. That was the fuel in me to drive it. That I never wanted to go back to that scenario ever again, or put anyone in that position. So from then on, from 2013, we turned it, we cleared down the debt, and from 14, 15, 16, we drove it. We made a small bit of profit, but we were starting to get rated in the industry for can do. Because we came from mining, we all of a sudden found ourselves in data. And it was another massive story. It was probably the biggest success part of my life. It put us on the launch pad for into the data center in 2016. And they were all of a sudden looking at us saying, like, the attitude we had. Because when we were going underground, or there was teams going underground 2 kilometres, they couldn't forget it. Everything had to be with them. This was coming into a data centre industry and they liked it.
So tell us about that transition, because we're in the mid-2010s. Data centres are starting to become a very, very big thing. What was the moment that it all turned for LMH Engineering going into the data centre business?
It was a strange one. It was one of the days, it was the day my mother died. We had a contract just to be secured. And I remember myself and two brothers, we stayed the night with the mother in James Hospital as she was passing away. I was coming down the road. I was on the brink. Before 3 days before she died, she asked me, did you land the big contract? And it was a case, I had to tell her yes, just for her to be peaceful. I was coming down the road, and there was a great guy, a Kiwi, working for a client. He was from New Zealand and he was a really great guy. But he was tough, but he was firm, but he was fair. And I was coming down the road and he says to me, I'm sorry for your loss. But he says, I still need to get you into contract here and I need information today. And that was the turning point. I went back to the office and everything was very fresh from the morning, and everyone rallied around and it brought a real camaraderie to the organisation. And we won the contract. And
this was the day that your mother passed away.
Yeah, very day, yeah. And we won it and we drove hard to deliver. And that has been the forefront of everything we do. And it's instilled in the culture of LMH. Like, we've got the attitude that we can do it. We love hearing it can't be done. When we hear that, that's fuel.
Were you not shattered on that day?
Totally shattered. But look, you lift above it. Your adrenaline takes over all of a sudden. Again, I do often say it, and you'll be saying it when you would be having the toughest of days, you'd be feeding families. Business is tough. There's no question about it. But when you see an opportunity, my mother was the same. I remember going into the Bay Hotel to hang curtains with her the night her father died. And I was told going in the door, don't tell the owner that my father has died because he wouldn't want me here today. We'll tell him when we're finished. And this was a bit the same. I've seen it and I grew into it. So we just had to deliver.
And that data centre was Meta's data centre
in
Cluny. And that was 50 years after LMH Engineering had been founded. Was that the turning point for you?
I believe it was. Yeah, I think it was. It gave us a rating in the industry. It gave us good foundation. We were going into a new era of technology with design. We were really pushing. I wanted to have a design team, engineering team, all in-house. And when we got solidified and we got all the departments in, it was really the acceleration piece behind where we were going.
And you've big plans now. You're expanding, hopefully, to 350 jobs with 20 million euro investment, aiming for lots more in revenue. But just on data centres, what do you think of that pipeline of work now? Is it diminishing? We hear an awful lot about data centre development being stopped in Ireland.
There's no question about it. It's diminishing. I would have fear factor for Ireland. Our market looks export. With the exception of one developer in Ireland that we're working very close with on productization for them, I do feel that Ireland is getting very stagnant, and it is worrying because we have this talent pool built up in Ireland. For to manufacture, we're world class at what we do. Wouldn't matter where we go in the world, we'll see Irish trades on a site. And it's problematic for us now to think we need a steady flow at home to be able to ride the wave of abroad, because the guys are homebound and they like to come in and out on projects both at home and abroad, so they're not abroad full time. And that would be a challenge that I would see coming down the tracks.
Did you read the article written by Stripe co-founder, Limerick-born billionaire John Collison, on how to cut through some of the infrastructural blockages, or what? How would you, your own views, compare to that?
To John Collison, like, I think Ireland needs more of that talk. It needs more of them world leaders that's going abroad. Bring it back, bring it home. I think it needs a government to listen. I think it needs to change the reform around what the industry leaders are seeing. I see it myself, like, there's a serious amount of red tape and bureaucracy now coming in, even into the smaller companies like myself. My biggest sleepless night right now is a fibre optic cable. Can we get it into our facility? It's just becoming...
You're building a new factory.
Yeah, we put a capex expenditure out 3 years ago for going fibre optic processing. And it was a big capex expenditure for us. We put it out there and we've the machines being installed and we need to be commissioned now over the next month. And we're not ready from an infrastructural point of view 3 years on from when we applied for it. So it's a challenge, but we'll get over the challenge.
What about the other side of the coin of data centres, which we've spoken about? That's the environmental side. There's a lot of criticism of that particular business on the environment. How do you think about that?
I think the data centre, the way they're developing and building data centres right now, I think it's world class, being straight up. They're bringing so much to the table, so much to the economy, that they can build it to whatever standard they like. And the emissions it produces is very little in my mind.
Hmm. 25 years, you have been on this journey, but your own teenage son, Shay, has just followed you into the business.
Yeah, 25 years to the day and date in July, Shay came in to do an apprenticeship as well. He wants to work with his hands. He's going into the maintenance and automation piece. He's staying away from what exactly I was doing, but it's similar. And yeah, he has an ambition. He wants to do it. He wants to get into that side of the business. It's great for me to have him there, but I would love him to see the other side of the world too. I don't want them just to be institutionalized. But at the same time, he's reliant. He's actually up on a maintenance shutdown for a very long-standing client for us. And he was looking forward to going 2 kilometres underground this Monday. So he was. And it didn't happen for him. He was released off the crew. So yeah, it's definitely a proud moment to have him there.
And speaking of pride, do you think much about Willie Wilmington, your mentor, your neighbour, the guy who got you into welding in the first place? Do you think about him often and what he might make of your journey?
Every day. Yeah, every day. I don't know what he'd make of it. He loved his own little empire. And when you see the scale and size of LMH and the hours of work that goes into it 7 days a week, I don't know what he'd say. I don't know, would he say you're mad? I don't know, would he say it's a credit to you? But he definitely would be proud, like, to take it from that age and run with it and go for it. I think he'd definitely be proud.
James Kelly, Managing Director of LMH Engineering, thank you very much for joining us today. And James is a finalist in this year's EY Entrepreneurs of the Year programme. And if you want to put a face to the voice, you'll see James on your TV screen soon in the new series, The Entrepreneurs, which will air on RT1 on Monday at 8 p.m.